Coming up on Locked On Dodgers, it may not be a rivalry, but when you're playing the team that's chasing you in the division, it's always a big series, and the Dodgers started the four-game series with the Padres with a 3-1 win, beating Joe Musgrove, who has been the Padres' ace, behind two Justin Turner homers. We're going to talk all about Turner's homers, a great play by Chris Taylor, some recurring themes in the season that we saw in this game, and a bunch of other stuff. So let's get Locked On Dodgers.
You are Locked On Dodgers, your daily Los Angeles Dodgers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Dodger fans. This is Locked On Dodgers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Thank you for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every weekday morning. Remember, this show is free and available on all podcast platforms and on YouTube simply by searching for Locked On Dodgers. Or even better, go ahead and subscribe wherever you're watching or listening right now, and then you will never miss a day because you know we're not going to. If this is your first time listening or watching, I am Jeff Snyder. That guy digitally superimposed next to me is my co-host Vince Samperio. Vince and I are both lifelong Dodger fans, just like you are. We've also both spent time covering the Dodgers in the locker room and the press box. So we're not quite insiders, but we bring you the smart fans' perspective on our boys in blue. And as I said at the top, the Dodgers won the first game of the four-game series with the Padres, and it has a little different feel than Dodgers-Padres series, like, say, last year. But it's still at least as important as it was last year, Vince, and it's really good when you go in with a Mitch White against Joe Musgrove matchup and come away with a victory, and not even a cheap fluky victory, but a good solid victory. It feels real good right now.
Yeah. You tell me Mitch White, Joe Musgrove, and Will Smith, Trey Turner, and Freddie Freeman don't have a hit and the Dodgers win the game, then I would have been very happy. And that's exactly how we're feeling. And a clean inning from Craig Kimbrel on top of all of it. So it was nice to see. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting just real quick on, you know, how, I don't know if last year humbled Padre fans. It seems that they're not as active, or at least I haven't seen it as active as they were last year and in the past. And especially in the year that they kind of have the right to be how they were last year, where, you know, they're right behind nipping at the Dodgers' heels. They haven't had Tatis all year. They've been pitching really well. You know, Machado is out. He came back, and Machado, who wants to play against the Dodgers so bad that he drove 7 hours from Phoenix instead of flying so he could keep the swelling reduced in his ankle. So it means a lot to him. It means a lot to these guys. But at the end of the day, the Dodgers won this game, extended their division lead a little bit, and hopefully can continue to do so. Because if all the games you've seen this weekend, Musgrove versus Mitch White was probably the biggest mismatch, and the Dodgers won that game.
Vince, you and I have both driven from Phoenix to LA and vice versa. Has it ever taken you 7 hours?
No, but I think
Benny needs to find the gas pedal.
No, well, I think that was what they wrote. I don't know if it actually took them 7 hours, but I think they probably just calculated the mileage and going 65 or whatever. And just,
yeah. So yeah. Somebody's myth building first part. But yeah, Mitch White was great. And, you know, I guess you could make a case that Joe Musgrove outpitched him, especially through six innings. Musgrove was, you know, pitching at least as well as White and really better, you know, dominating. And then the Dodgers got to him a little bit in the seventh inning, made him throw pitches. That was the big thing. We saw on Wednesday's game, a huge kind of turning point in that game was a big walk by Cody Bellinger. And in this game, a huge turning point was a big walk by Max Muncy, got Musgrove's pitch count up. So if nothing else, it gave us hope because he came into the seventh inning at 74 pitches. And you're like, crap, this dude's going to throw a complete game. And then, you know, Will Smith had a good at bat. He got out, but he made Musgrove throw some pitches. And then Muncy works a deep count, works a walk. And so by the time JT came up, Musgrove was already at like 85, 86 pitches. And you're like, oh, sweet. Dodgers might only have to face him this inning, might get him out, or at worst case scenario, after the eighth. And then JT hits the home run, and that was it. So, you know, everything kind of came together in that inning. And really, that's all you need against Joe Musgrove. You're not going to string a ton of hits together against a guy like that. And we saw it in the 2017 World Series. I always think back to the two games that Justin Verlander pitched. And, you know, Verlander should have been 0-2 in that World Series. if not for Yasiel Puig or Kenley Jansen or whoever you want to blame for Dave Roberts. I guess some people want to blame him for game two. But, you know, Justin Verlander left both games trailing because the Dodgers got a big Jock Peterson home run and a big Corey Seager home run off of him. And that's what you got to do against these pitchers is sometimes you need a home run. Small balls, you know, stringing hits together is great, but you're not going to do that very often against a great pitcher. And Joe Musgrove right now is a great pitcher. And sometimes you got to get a big home run off him.
Yeah, and that's exactly, you know, maybe not from the unlikeliest of people, but if you would have went up and down the lineup, you probably would have been 6th, 7th, 8th on your list of guys that would have 3 hits against Joe Musgrove, with 2 of them being home runs. So, you know, good looks for Justin Turner. Yeah, I mean, you hit him hard every single time. Even the single you hit was a line shot to left field. Max Muncy hit the ball hard and had that good walk. We'll talk about when he hit the ball hard a little bit later and what happened.
Maybe hit play, it too hard.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it was one of those games where it's going to be a low scoring game. And sometimes in low scoring games, it's a matter of who hits the mistake pitch or who makes a good at bat and hits it over. Like you mentioned, and that's exactly what it came down to. The Dodgers had 3 runs off 2 home runs and the Padres had 1 run. They tried to string some hits together, but they couldn't quite get it out. And another reason they didn't get more runs, we'll also talk about in a little bit here with Chris Taylor making a play that brought some deja vu to some Dodger fans.
Yeah, 2020, I'll never forget that play when Chris Taylor threw out Trent Grisham to end a game. It was a walk-off throw out. Kenley Jansen was struggling, and Taylor saved his bacon. Grisham would have been the tying run. Manny Machado hit a laser fly out, and Taylor threw Grisham out trying to score on it. And then we saw basically a mirror image replay today. Instead of left field, it was right field. And instead of Manny Machado from the right side of the plate, it was Jerickson Profar from the left side of the plate, ripping a hard line drive at Taylor, and Taylor getting in position and throwing out Grisham at the plate. And both plays included great catches and tags by Will Smith. I mean, this one by Will Smith, it was ridiculously good. You will never see a catcher make a better play than what you saw here.
Was the only way they were going to get the out.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, as great as Taylor's throw was, Will Smith's catch was every bit as important to that. But, you know, I kind of wanted to talk, Vince, about talking about JT and CT and their two, you know, had kind of the big plays of the game. And they're almost like flip-flops of each other because Chris Taylor struck out 3 times. He looked lost at the plate, looked terrible against Joe Musgrove. And yet on defense, he still impacted the game. JT was kind of the opposite. Justin Turner had two home runs, drove in all 3 runs. He also had what could have been a huge boneheaded play in the field, forgetting how many outs there were. Routine tailor-made double play ball, and he just takes you out at first. So it gives the Padres another chance. Luckily, they got out of it. Justin Brule got out of it. Cody Bellinger made not an outstanding play, but a really good play coming in hard on a Trent Grisham blooper to catch the 3rd out. And so for JT, that boneheaded play came between his 2 homers. And so to see him not let his defensive lapse affect him at the plate and Taylor not let his offensive struggles affect him in the field, it kind of shows you how important both sides of the game are in baseball.
Yeah, and I think the Dodgers have overall done a good job of this. I mean, Cody Bellinger's not hitting anywhere near what he'd like to be hitting, but just in that inning, you mentioned the last play of the inning where he comes running in earlier in the inning, play over his head. As soon as the ball's hit, he's sprinting directly to where he thinks the ball's going to be, and that's exactly where the ball went. And, you know, it's just fun to watch him out there, fun to watch Taylor out there when he's moving around and, you know, adjusting to right field. You know, we know that earlier in a couple weeks ago or last week, whatever it was, that they were hesitant to put Taylor out there in right field because they weren't sure how he was going to handle it because he hadn't played there. And now he made that play that ended up, I don't know about saving the game, but it definitely helped because bases were loaded at that point. They don't get it. That would have been another run. And then a base hit or something else happened, brings in a couple more runs. And, you know, Mitch White's out in the 2nd inning instead of out in the 4th and or out in the 5th. And, you know, it changes a lot of the dynamics of the game. So I think overall the Dodgers have done a good job of that. And then when it comes down to the Turner play, I mean, it's what I kind of talked about yesterday of Dodgers playing strong defensive baseball and not making those mental mistakes. And unfortunately, they did make the mental mistake. They got out of it late. later on, you know, Max Muncy made one of the somewhat of a base running mistake we'll talk about right now. But the Dodgers, it didn't end up hurting them, although, you know, they could have picked up maybe another run there. But, yeah, it's one of those things where all in all, a lot of the guys that are struggling this season, don't let it affect their defense usually, or at least not on purpose.
Yeah, absolutely. There were a few recurring themes in this game that we're going to talk about in a minute. Gavin Lux's defense, a failed replay challenge, and some questionable base running. So we're going to talk about all those things when we come back. So thank you for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every day, and please keep it locked on Dodgers. BetOnline.net is your number one source for all your betting needs and sports info. Find all the latest sports developments, league reviews, and news, including all of Major League Baseball. BetOnline is your continued source for all your sporting wagering information, including live betting, esports, and scores. And BetOnline.net remains your best spot for all of your sports scores, podcasts, and news this season. BetOnline.net is the fastest and easiest way to check in on all your favorite sports and events, including MMA, boxing, and golf. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends and action. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, Vince, we are back. And as I mentioned going to the break, there were a couple recurring themes that happened in this game, and or at least potentially recurring themes. And I have thoughts on all three of these different instances, and I'm interested to see how our thoughts on it. I have a feeling we're actually going to disagree on one of them, but which will be good. We don't disagree often enough on this show. You know, we're just both right way too often. But this time, I think I'm right and you're wrong. So I'm looking forward to that. But first, let's start with that one. Let's talk about the instant replay challenge. The Dodgers lost another challenge today. They've lost about two-thirds of their challenges this year. This one, Chris Taylor claimed that a pitch had hit him on the hand. The umpire called it a foul ball. The Dodgers challenged it. They lost. The call stood, meaning there was no conclusive evidence one way or the other, and the Dodgers lost their challenge. It didn't really come back to bite them. I don't think there were any plays after the game that they would have considered challenging. The only one they might have considered challenging came before that with Jerks and Profar sliding into third base, and they didn't challenge that. So it didn't bite them, but what were your thoughts on that replay challenge, Vince?
It's one of those where right off, it didn't look like a for sure thing. And I think for the Dodgers, you know, especially we've talked about it before, and it was talked about obviously after that challenge was missed and, you know, how bad the Dodgers have been this year. I think they're now like 30-some% of challenges, 30% right, which is not good. And I think, I don't know whether it's the strategy, I don't know whether it's, you know, I don't know exactly what it is, but I do think they have to be a little bit more strict with these as moving forward. Whereas if it's not a super impactful time and it's, or a for sure challenge, like for sure something that they're going to win, then I think they kind of need to keep them in their pocket a little bit. I think it's kind of like in the NBA, they started doing the challenges and most coaches don't use them until like the fourth quarter, because that's usually when it's a little bit more impactful, even though technically if you lose by 2 points and you challenge a 3-point early in the game, like technically that would work, but it seems more impactful later on. I think that's kind of where the Dodgers are at. I don't know, you know, getting a guy on base in this type of game probably is an impactful moment, but realistically, like, you know, it's also not that impactful because you need a couple more things to happen where like later on in the game, if that Profar play had happened later and he did get off the base, but they couldn't challenge it, that's impactful because that runner's on third. Whereas Chris Taylor getting hit by a pitch, he's just on first base. So, you know, I don't know if it's a strategy change that they have to do or if they're going to do, but it's a strategy change that I would consider because even in the last couple weeks, we've seen them lose a couple before the fifth inning and they're kind of, you know, SOL the rest of the way.
Yeah. And I agree with basically everything you said, except I think this was a good challenge, and I think Major League Baseball got it wrong, and I think there was evidence that the ball did hit him because the front view, you can't tell if it hit his hand or above his hand on the bat, and the overhead view, you can't tell if it hit his hand or the knob of the bat, but the overhead view, you can see 100% for sure that it did not hit the bat above his hands. and the front view, you can see 100%. It did not hit the knob of the bat. Mathematically speaking, the only thing it could have hit was his hand. And so I think they got it wrong. And I think that the Dodgers should have won this replay. Now, who knows if it would have mattered, but it would have been one less strikeout for Chris Taylor on the game. And, you know, Gavin Lux and Trey Turner following him in the lineup, who knows what would have happened. But in this case, while I agree that, you know, we've mentioned this before, Clayton Kershaw kind of gave away their secret on an in-game interview that if the call from the replay room is 50-50, they challenge it. I think they probably need to adjust that because 50-50 calls aren't going to go their way very often, because 50-50 is the definition of call stands. You know, it's so they do need to be more sure. But in this particular case, I think MLB got it wrong and it was a good challenge personally.
Yeah.
Oh, did you have anything else to say on that? Another recurring theme, Gavin Lux in the first inning playing left field, hasn't played a lot of left field lately, and even overall hasn't played a ton of left field overall. And Manny Machado hit one kind of off the end of the bat, and Lux got a bad read, kind of got a not a great jump. And then in the middle of his run, he kind of misread it at one point. They speculated on the broadcast that he might have lost it in the stands or something. Ended up diving for it, still got his glove to it, couldn't quite make the play, turned into a double, which led to the only run scored by the Padres. And yeah, Gavin Lux, his defense has been a question or a topic of conversation throughout the season. We talked the other day about how his defense at second base has been really, really good lately. In left field, he's still a work in progress. And this one, I don't know how to feel about this, because I think it would have been a good play, a really good play if he had made the play. I do think Chris Taylor makes that play probably without leaving his feet. And definitely not, you know, it wouldn't have been a spectacular play. I think Chris Taylor makes it. I guess they haven't played many guys other than Taylor and Lux out in left field. But, you know, if I think to other guys who've played left field for the Dodgers the last couple of years, I don't think they necessarily make that play. And I don't know. Did you have any thoughts on that play, Vince?
Yeah, it's one of those where it's just a matter of, he's not a natural outfielder. And, you know, you see the difference, you know, and it may be an unfair comparison, but you see the difference when you see Bellinger play outfield and you see Gavin Lux play outfield. You know, Bellinger seems like he knows where the ball's going every single time right off the bat, or even right before the ball's hit, where Lux is more reactionary and uses his athleticism to make up for the lack of jump. Whereas, you know, Bellinger puts it all together, and you can tell, obviously, it's a big difference. But, you know, the thing on Lux's side is that, you know, he's not a natural outfielder. And for some people, they get it right away, and some people, they don't. And, you know, if he's a guy who's – he's probably played shortstop his whole life. He's probably always been the best player on the field, best player on the team, you know, growing up, obviously drafted out of high school, you know, came up through the Dodgers. Then when he got to the Dodgers, then, you know, he's not always the best player in the field. He's had to, you know, move to second base and try some outfield and try different things. And I think it's just a work in progress that the Dodgers are going to have to keep, you know, having out there at certain times. We'll talk maybe a little bit later, but, you know, Mookie Betts might play some infield when he comes back because he's not a fan of the DH, but isn't necessarily ready to play outfield. That's going to push Gavin Lux to the outfield because his bat's going to stay in the lineup. So, yeah, it's one of those things where he's just not a natural outfielder yet. He doesn't have that feel for it yet. He might develop it. He might not. But for the most part, he's going to make some plays, and sometimes there's going to be plays like this where they're just kind of like 50-50 and he doesn't make them.
Yeah, I honestly believe right now, because of the athleticism, Gavin Lux is a better left fielder than AJ Pollock was for most of last year. Because while Pollock maybe gets better reads and everything, Lux, I mean, I think Pollock would have held Manny to a single on that because he wouldn't even try to catch it on the fly. Yeah. He would have just played it on the one hop and held him to a single. And maybe there's some benefit to that. But yeah, I think Lux is probably going to be okay. But it is one of those things we just have to learn to live with, because his bat's been really good. And the fact that he can play left field, even if it's not perfect, is a big benefit to the Dodgers in a situation like this with Mookie out.
And then realistically on the roster right now, it would have been the only other options that would have been out there other than Taylor would have been Eddie Alvarez or Jake Lamb. And they probably don't make that play either. So it's just, that was just a matter of, you know, yeah, they don't have the right guns out there right now. And that's that's just, you know, the nature of it, how it goes sometimes.
Yeah, your best defensive lineman is probably Chris Taylor in left and Trace Thompson in right. And I don't think Trace Thompson against Joe Musgrove was a recipe for success. So yeah. Not that Gavin Lux did much, but Gavin Lux, I'll take him over Trace Thompson against Joe Musgrove any day. The third and final recurring theme of the game was Max Muncy ripped a double down the line that I feel like he ought to get credit for a double because he safely got to second base. And then in his pop-up slide, he popped off the bag and CJ Abrams did a good job to hold the tag on him because the rules as they currently stand are, you know, you hold the tag on him and if he pops off the bag by an inch, he's out. And, you know, I go back and forth on this, this rule. Initially I used to think, I don't think it's that big a problem that when a guy gets tagged while he's off the base, he gets called out. I do. And I think I still mostly feel that way, but these guys are such good athletes. They're so big and fast and everything, and they're sliding in. And I think probably before instant replay, there were hundreds of plays every year like this, that the umpire never considered calling a guy out. No, he clearly beat the throw. He's safe. And whether they saw him get tagged on the pop-up slide and just chose not to call it or didn't even think to look at it. And so it is an unintended consequence of instant replay. I don't necessarily hate it, but I definitely don't love it.
Yeah, if they made the halo rule, which is kind of, you know, if you're over the bag and you're not intentionally going to the next base, you're safe. If they made that a rule, I wouldn't be upset. If they leave it how it is, I wouldn't be upset because at the end of the day, it's going to come down to in the moment. In the moment, yesterday, he popped off the bag and the tag was on him and he was out. Okay, that's how it is. If it was the halo rule, he would have been safe. But then probably tomorrow there'd be a play where the Padres guy comes off the bag, but the halo rule is in effect and it doesn't hurt. So, like, it's a matter of when it goes against you, it goes against you. When it doesn't, it doesn't. There's really no – I don't have a set preference for the rule. I do think that obviously, you know, by letter of the law, yes, he's out. By, you know, what they've kind of always done and how it is, it's a little bit cheap sometimes. But like I said, it goes both ways. I don't feel like the Dodgers have been affected, you know, any other way more than the other. I do think Muncy, you know, he saw where the ball was. He saw the ball coming. He was on his horse because he knew how hard he hit the ball and it came off the wall and whoever was out there, Profar, I think, out there.
Mazzara, and he has a good arm.
Made a good play on it. And, you know, I think Muncy, I don't know. I'm pretty sure he slides normal without popping up. I think that was one of those where, yeah, he was going too fast, and the pop-up slide just hurt him that time. You know, not to put blame on Muncy, but I do think if you see there's going to be a close play at second, I'm not going to try to pop-up slide at that time.
Yeah, and that's where it falls into our recurring theme segment is I saw a lot of outrage on social media about Dodgers base running another out on the bases, blah, 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 blah. And for me, this one's totally different. This is, he hit the ball too hard, you know, and he barely made it safely. And to make it safely, he had to slide in a way that, you know, ended up causing him to be out. I don't want Max Muncy going in head first in that situation. And that's the only way to really make sure you don't come off the bag is to go in head first and kind of hug the bag, grab onto it, hold on for dear life. And Max Muncy's fingers and hands are too important to me. I don't want him going in. And that's why I've started to lean the other way on this rule is I feel like this rule is going to encourage or lead to more injuries because it makes people do unsafe slides or slide in ways that they're more likely to hurt themselves. But I didn't think this fell into the category of bad base running at all. This was just simply a fact that Max Muncy hit the ball too hard. He hit 111.2 miles an hour. If he hits at 109 miles an hour, he's in there with the stand-up devil, and it's not even an issue. But he hit the ball too hard is basically the problem.
Yeah, and everything went right on the other side. The carom was perfect. Mazzara picked it up, made a good throw. And, you know, Abrams kept the tag on him because he was safe. And, you know, it's one of those where you kind of know if when the guys do slide head first, then they'll keep the tag on them. When guys slide feet first, it's usually not a thing to, like, keep the tag on them unless they slide past it. Like, they're kind of sliding off to the side. So it's one of those where it all just kind of worked out, just kind of how some of the other stuff happened. But, yeah, I wouldn't call this a base running error, but the Dodgers have had a lot of those this season, but not this one.
Yep. All right, we're going to come back in a minute. We're going to talk about some Mookie Betts news, some David Price news, a new addition to the 40-man roster of a guy that none of us had ever heard of before today, and some All-Star voting stuff. So thank you again for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every day, and please keep it Locked On Dodgers. And now we are back, Vince, for our final segment. Let's start with a little bit of news. David Price was removed from the active roster for a couple days, put on the family emergency list. All we know is that he is attending to a family emergency. And Dave Roberts did say, as far as he knows, everybody's okay. And so we obviously just want to send out our well wishes. Hopefully it is not an emergency in the negative sort of way. I don't know what other kind of emergencies there are, but whatever it is, I hope David Price and his family are okay.
Yeah, and, you know, realistically, on the other side, it might have helped the Dodgers a little bit because Justin Brule came up, and he got some of the most important outs of the game there after Mitch White. He struck out Cronenworth with the runner on third, then came in and got some outs against the lefties in the middle of the lineup for the Padres. So, you know, I don't know if David Price would have done the same. So, you know, yeah, well wishes to David Price, but also it ended up working out for the Dodgers.
Yeah, they probably go Alex Vesia in that spot where Brule came in, and then Price later when Vesia came in. And yeah, who knows how things would have turned out. But Justin Brule did a good job on his first day back from AAA. Mookie Betts has started doing baseball activities, and we initially got word that he was likely to DH when he came back from the injured list for the first little bit. And then we got word that he might play second base instead because he doesn't really care much for DHing. He likes to be more involved in the game. And he's played second base in the past. And realistically, it's not a terrible idea. You just, you know, you push. Basically, that means that Justin Turner or Max Muncy is the DH every game because the other one's playing third base. Because then you move Gavin Lux to left field, Chris Taylor to right field, like we've seen. But, you know, Justin Turner and Max Muncy are getting the bulk of the starts at DH anyway. Obviously, on days when Austin Barnes has to catch, you know, maybe they go with Will Smith and give one of those other guys an actual day off. But the other news about Mookie was that Dave Roberts said he'd be batting at the top of the lineup. And, you know, you and I were discussing before we hit record, if you view the lineup in segments of three, then batting third is the top of the lineup. But if you view it as nine distinct segments, then the only definition of top of the lineup is batting leadoff. Most people interpreted Dave's comments to be that Mookie would be batting leadoff. I think you saw a little bit more nuance in that.
Yeah, I don't know. It might just be me reading into it, but when the question was asked is where is Mookie going to bat when he comes back? And Dave Roberts just said he'll be at the top. And me, the person I am, read that as he didn't say leadoff. He said at the top, which I can, you know, read as first, second, or third. Realistically, probably going to bat leadoff just because, as we know, Mookie's a guy that's going to be around for a while, guaranteed, and he likes to bat leadoff. Trey Turner, as good as he's been at leadoff, is not a guy guaranteed to be here past this season, and Trey Turner's been good regardless, you know, just been a little bit better in leadoff, which could have, he could have been this hot in the three hole if Mookie was still playing anyway, so we don't really know. But yeah, just semantics. If he does come back in about third, then I'll go back to this interview and say, you know, Dave Roberts never said leadoff, but realistically, I think he's going to bat leadoff.
Yeah, I think he definitely meant leadoff by that, but we'll see. And, you know, overall, I don't think lineup order matters that much. And if Mookie's more comfortable at leadoff, he's probably going to be a little bit more effective at leadoff, and that's probably just fine. And Trey Turner, I think, has gone hitless three games in a row now. So maybe they just tell Trey, sorry, man, we're moving you down because we can't trust you at the top of the order anymore. And he'll say, but I'm still batting third. That's still the top, Dave. Vince told me so.
Hey, man. Semantics. I love semantics, and I can always argue my way out of it because of semantics.
The Dodgers also made a roster move on their 40-man roster. They transferred Daniel Hudson to the 60-day IL, which was just a clerical move. Just a quick note on that. Even when a guy goes down knowing he needs Tommy John surgery or ACL surgery or whatever, you know he's out. Teams always put them on the 10-day IL or 15-day, whichever one it is, initially, and they don't move them to the 60-day IL until they need that spot on the 40-man roster. Guys on the shorter IL are still on the 40-man roster, but on guys on the 60-day IL don't count as 40-man roster spots. So they didn't move Daniel Hudson to the 40-man or to the 60-day IL until Thursday because they needed the 40-man roster spot because they claimed a guy off waivers from the Cleveland Guardians by the name of Ian Jabeau, who is a 28-year-old pitcher, almost 29 years old. He'll be 29 in November. Big dude, 6'3", 250, and looks like, I don't know. I've never seen Ian Jabeau pitch. Like I said, I'd never heard of him until I saw the Dodgers had claimed him. But just looking at his stats and his size and everything and his stuff, he strikes me as a guy the Dodgers might see something in. You know, they you know, whether it's a Phil Bickford type or a Yancy Almonte type or, you know, Alex Vesia type, there's so many relief pitchers the Dodgers have brought in and said, hey, we're going to go ahead and turn you into a great relief pitcher now, okay? And they say, okay. And then they do. Ian Jabeau could be that. He could also be, you know, last year or the year before the Dodgers claimed Ashton Godot. And then we never heard about him again until 2 weeks later when they DFA'd him to make room for somebody else. And then we didn't think about him again until he pitched against the Dodgers earlier this year. You know, Ian Jabeau could be Ashton Godot. That sounds like the start of a really bad poem. But Ian Jabeau could be Yancy Almonte or Reyes Maranta or Phil Bickford.
Yeah, you got to imagine we see something, you know, obviously depending what it is or how fast they think they can get it turned around is going to be how long he lasts. They do need, at this point, it's one of those things also where they just kind of need arms in general because, you know, they have injuries and they're going to, you know, play a bunch of games in a bunch of days. And, you know, if guys, you know, the guys, Mitch White, they don't have the starting pitching that's going to go six innings every time out with Mitch White. He's probably going to go four or five every time out realistically, which is what he did. And then you have to pick up some extra arms there. So, yeah, we'll have to see. I know from seeing people that are smarter than me or looked it up when the Dodgers claimed him, that it didn't seem like there was too much other than some fastball movement that he has and the fact that he's using two different breaking balls this year compared to past years. You know, if there is one team that usually can get maximization out of their pitchers, the Guardians have been known to be one of those teams. But, you know, it's also a matter of they're now maybe don't have that luxury. They're playing for the division now and they, you know, need pitchers that have a little bit more proven track record maybe. And that's probably why he got the boot of the DFA. So, yeah, we'll have to wait and see. But, you know, obviously they claimed him for a reason and he's not just a warm body. But it's just a matter of how much they've seen him and how fast they need to turn it around.
Yeah, and he has pitched in the big leagues last year and this year, limited stints both times, but a total of 8 innings, and he's allowed 2 earned runs, both on 2 solo home runs. So it could be as simple as the Dodgers think they can help him figure out how to stop giving up home runs because those are the only runs he allows. He's having a 0 ERA if he doesn't allow any homers. Last little bit of conversation before we wrap this up. It's a little bit long already. All-star voting ended. The first round ended on Thursday, and the Dodgers had 2 guys make the finalists, Mookie Betts in the outfield and Trey Turner at shortstop. Betts had been leading all National League vote getters. Ronald Acuña Jr. passed him up, so Acuña gets the automatic starting spot. So as of right now, the only starters we know in the all-star game are Ronald Acuña Jr. and Aaron Judge. Everybody else is now in the final 2 for voting. So Mookie Betts is going up against Jock Peterson, Adam Duvall, and 2 other people who I can't remember right now for the final 2 starting spots. And Trey Turner is going up against Dansby Swanson. That's kind of they're a pretty even matchup. So it'll be interesting to see, but the Dodgers have potential for 2 all-star starters. And then obviously Will Smith and Tony Gonsolin and all-star game starter Clayton Kershaw and whoever else may be getting added after.
Yeah, I don't like the matchup against Dansby. Braves fans have been pretty good at voting and being, especially coming off a World Series title and especially Dansby being good. So I don't love that matchup. It's going to have to be like a bunch of other people voting against Dansby rather than, you know, the Dodger fans voting for Trey. Because as we know, other than, you know, which they got in Justin Turner and the push for Max Muncy, Dodger fans don't necessarily always get out and vote like they like other teams do.
Yeah, I mentioned Adam Duvall as one of the outfield finalists. He has a 71 OPS plus this year. That tells you all you need to know about Braves fans voting for the All-Star game.
Yeah, not I don't much even think he has a hit against the Dodgers this year.
Yeah, and that's saying something. So go out and vote for Mookie and Trey, and write your congressman about Will Smith and Tony Gonsolin. And I think that's it for today, right, Vince?
That is it for today.
And that means that's it for the week. The Dodgers have three more games against the Padres this weekend. We will be back with you on Monday to talk about this whole series, hopefully a Dodgers series win. You know, right now I'm going to hope for a sweep, but I'll take 3 out of 4 for sure. Dodgers currently up by 2.5 games on the Padres, and I think 4 games in the loss column, which is important. So that's going to do it for us. Thank you for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every day. For your next listen, check out Locked On MLB Prospects. Host Lindsey Crosby is a prospect encyclopedia, and he's going deep on the stars, MLB stars of tomorrow. It's free and available wherever you get podcasts. If you're not watching or listening to Locked On Dodgers every day, we would love if you would add 1 or 2 days a month to your rotation. Please tell your friends and family who love the Dodgers as much as you do about our show, because maybe they'll like it too. You can follow us on Instagram and on Twitter at Locked On Dodgers. Vince is on Twitter at Vince Samperio. I'm on Twitter at Snydog, and our DMs are open in all of those places. Our email address is lockedondodgers@gmail.com. And our phone number for voicemails or text messages is 323-863-LOCK-5625. We are here every weekday morning, and we hope you'll be here with us. When you get in your car or sit on your couch, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Dodgers. And remember, you don't have to agree. You just have to listen. We'll talk to you on Monday.
Have a good one.